be glad to tell you about it, but I would ask for your support.
Thank you. And no amendments?
None.
Great. Any questions for Representative Dallum?
So,
Sarah Atkinson.
If we pass this bill, according to your testimony, we're going to get along with 48-9 other states. So this is a friendship bill.
I want to rephrase that statement. We won't get along with 49 other states. We'll be similar to most other states.
You don't use the word conquer.
No, I find it a real treat to come over and testify in front of a Senate committee. There's two things that I'd rather do. One is take a beating.
No, we're easy. I'm sorry.
And the other? You don't have to answer. It's okay.
Thank you. You're so kind.
Welcome to the Senate. Okay.
Any other questions, Senator Atkinson? And we lost Senator Shields. He probably went to the penitentiary. Thank you, Representative Dallum.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Next up, Robin Freeman, Bill Seeley, and Paul Cosgrove.
Let's hear what these people have to say on this little friendship bill.
Madam Chair, with your permission, I've been elected to go first. Paul Cosgrove, representing Nationwide Insurance Company, in support of House Bill 3464. The auto insurance industry is one of the large users of DMV records. As you all know, nowadays people get quotes over the phone for auto insurance, they get quotes over the internet, and the immediate access and availability of accurate information about a person's driving record is critical in order to give the person the correct quote. We do believe that, although Oregon has been and the DMV has been quite diligent in trying to police information that has left its door and gone several steps down the road, this bill is a major step forward in helping them police that and making sure it doesn't get into the wrong hands, yet is available for legitimate uses that the public wants us to have the information available for. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Next.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson. DMV worked with the sponsors of House Bill 3464 and the bill's content to strengthen the ability to control the disclosure of record information. The insurance industry approached the department to ask us to develop a service that would allow them to access DMV driving records online in real time. Mm-hmm. Driving records are already available to the insurance industry, but with an overnight turnaround which no longer meets the needs of that industry. Most other states already provide an online service similar to what we intend to develop. But we had some experience that suggests that the more information is available, the more likely it is to end up in the hands of those who are not qualified to receive it. We researched how we might amend the law to strengthen our oversight of the sale of DMV records, and it resulted in House Bill 3464. The department has researched instances of misuse of record information and found most of the concerns are a result of information being made available via the internet. In tracing the origin of the information, we've learned that the greatest risk is with information that has been resold multiple times. We found that in some cases, with each resale, adherence to the laws by both the seller and buyer gets weaker. There needs to be a way to break the chain of resale when misuse occurs. The bill gives the department the ability to authorize to whom DMV information is resold once a qualified business buys the information from the department. Once a qualified business buys the information, they are free to use it for purposes allowed under the law. The bill in no way affects their ability to do that. However, once a business has used the information, they are then free under the law to resell it to any other qualified business. This is where the department would exercise some authority to authorize the resale. This bill would have the seller require their customers to provide documentation to the department that shows they are legally entitled to the information. This would also be true for disseminators, which are businesses legally entitled to the information because their primary business activity is to disseminate information to others. We would implement a process similar to that which we plan to use for anyone reselling information. However, with disseminators, we likely will only require that the disseminator have their customers' qualifications for inspection by the department. Through routine audits, we would inspect the documentation and take action where indicated. This bill gives the department the opportunity to not authorize a buyer if they aren't eligible to receive the information, and more importantly, to prevent further resales if we find the buyer misused the information. When responding to a complaint or following up on an audit, the new authority will allow us to break the chain of resale exactly where it needs to be broken to prevent any further improper redisclosure. And we would be doing this without interfering with the legal resale of DMV information. The bill also includes an important provision to make the state immune from liability from any claim arising from the resale of DMV information. We've included this provision to make sure that businesses do not lessen their own efforts to verify that a buyer is legally entitled to the information. Once the department takes any active role in authorizing a buyer, the risk exists that a business would rely wholly on the department's conclusion. And that is not a desirable situation for our department. The immunity clause will make it clear that resales take the risk, assume the risk when they are qualifying their buyers. We appreciate the committee's consideration of this bill, and we believe that it will strengthen the department's ability to oversee adherence to laws discovering the disclosure of DMV information. And with me today is Bill Seeley. He's the customer service manager for the Department of, for Driver Motor Vehicles, and he'd be happy to help answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Any questions, Senator Shields? Senator Atkinson, I think you're off the hook, unless, of course, you want to say something. Smart. All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3464. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2059. Ms. Harris, what do we have?
Thank you, Chair Brown. House Bill 2059A authorizes the Oregon Board of Medical Examiners to collect a full set of fingerprints from licensure applicants and licensees for nationwide criminal background checks. It also permits the board to impose a fee that would cover the cost of those background checks.
Great. Ms. Haley, why don't you come on up?
Why do you have to do all the fingers?
Come in. Good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Brown, members of the committee. My name is Kathleen Haley, and I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Board of Medical Examiners. And we hope that through House Bill 2059-A that the board will be able to do nationwide criminal background checks. The board's mission is to protect the public, and one of the ways in which the board protects the public is through a screening of its applicants. Right now, under the existing system, we ask our applicants whether or not they have any criminal background, but we cannot verify that. We don't keep any fingerprints in our office currently. While we have the authority to do statewide criminal background checks, about 70% of our applicants come from other states, so we don't do the statewide check. Surrounding states of Idaho and California are doing the national criminal background check, and they are getting a positive response of about 5%. One of the board's concerns in bringing this bill forward was that we would be attracting those applicants for licensure who would not be able to get a license in either Idaho or California.
Can we get the other 5%?
Senator Shields.
Well, that's what you're saying, essentially.
Chair Brown, Senator Shields, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
I was just saying that since we'd get that percentage that couldn't quite pass the national test, they'd come here because they know that they're not going to have to face the kind of scrutiny they'd get in Idaho or California.
Chair Brown, Senator Shields, that's our fear.
So, Ms. Haley, just to sort of refresh my memory and the fact that this is not exactly a human services committee you have up here, the Board of Medical Examiners has jurisdiction over 4 types of medical providers. What are they?
Physicians, physician assistants, podiatrists, and acupuncturists.
Okay. And right now you have the authority to do statewide criminal background checks. You're simply asking for the authority to do national background checks.
Chair Brown, that's correct.
How many other states have national background checks besides Washington and Idaho?
My understanding is about 18 right now, and it is recommended that all states seek this authority.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Haley? Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Ms. Meyer, you don't need to testify. You do wish. Okay. Come on up.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I actually have signed up to testify against all three, but really my testimony is the same. So in terms of opening the subsequent hearings and getting on record, I'm happy to do whatever the chair would like.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to open public hearings on 2059, 2061, 2102.
That's it.
That's it.
Only those three. And I want to give a little bit.
At least you're consistent.
Try to be. Always. I want to give a little bit of history on the use of fingerprints for non-criminal background checks. It's. I don't think Patricia Whitfield is here today from the Oregon State Police, but if you ever need an expert from someone about this use and the law around this, she really is the one. And indeed, we've worked with her extensively on another bill. That's sort of the omnibus bill over on the House side. But in starting in the 1990s, there was a need and a focus to protect children and doing the fingerprint, the criminal nationwide fingerprint check. And so first TSPC, Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, sought authority to do it on teachers and principals. And I think some districts also sought it for employees who have contact with children, and then the Department of Education to do so for school bus drivers. We generally oppose these for a number of reasons that I want to lay out and then talk about some of the concerns that were addressed in the past by the legislature to address some of our concerns. On the forefront, it assumes that everyone is guilty and must prove their innocence. I mean, I understand the purpose and the reasons behind the fingerprint checks, but normally you arrest someone before you have the authority. You suspect them of a crime before you have the authority to take their fingerprints for the criminal justice system, and we're using these for the quote-unquote non-criminal justice system. But we do have that concern. We've objected to turning the fingerprints over to the FBI because of its long history of violating the constitutional rights of innocent people who are engaged in political, social, or religious protected activities. We have felt it was wrong to send fingerprints of innocent people to the FBI without safeguards to prevent the FBI from adding or creating a database of people who have never committed a crime. We were concerned that people who committed minor offenses or even major offenses that were at a very young age not be barred from employment merely because of their past history, even though the history might be irrelevant for their ability to safely perform their job, and by safely I mean for everyone involved. Finally, we also argued that the widespread distribution of criminal histories, which is the information you get back on someone if they do have a criminal history, would make it more difficult for a rehabilitated offender to move on with their life, which of course undermines the state's interest in terms of rehabilitating offenders. In other words, if a lot of people got this very confidential information and spread it around, that has a risk and an implication, particularly in small communities. So some of the safeguards that were put in place to address our concerns many years ago was that the legislature ensured that there is a nexus, and I will try to limit my use of that term, between a person who is fingerprinted and the job. In other words, it wasn't just everyone who could be fingerprinted. You had to articulate someone who had contact with vulnerable populations or children, someone who had handling fiduciary or money issues. So we did that by statute to, on the front end, limit the world. And then by rule, there would be some more implementation. There is also what's called a fitness determination that is made, and we created, there's a statute, RS 670.280, which states in part, and it addressed some of our concerns. A licensing board commissioner agency may not deny, suspend, or revoke an occupational professional license solely for the reason that the applicant or licensee had been convicted of a crime, but it may consider the relationship of the facts which support the conviction and all intervening circumstances to the specific occupational professional standards in determining the fitness of the person to receive and hold the license. Now, I will get into a minute why the law is all over the place, but again, that's in a very separate section of the Oregon statutes, and it's important protection. Also, there was assurance, we've got some safeguards, that there are no permanent records of the fingerprints by law-abiding individuals that would be retained by the FBI or any state agency by requiring that the prints be returned or destroyed. So you'll see that in each bill. You'll see this jargon throughout about the FBI, if the FBI policy is to destroy the FBI policy must be to destroy, and the prints will be returned. And if the FBI policy changes, then we shouldn't send our prints to them if they are going to store fingerprints. So that also required that the prints not be forwarded if the FBI policy changed. I have to tell you, we hear from a lot of people about their concern to this day that what's really happening with these fingerprints. You know, are they really doing it? It's no longer in the card. It's all done by some facsimile and data sharing and by computer. So there is concerns of people. And finally, to protect the dissemination of criminal history information, there were safeguards put in. For instance, when it came to the non-certified employees for schools, like the school bus drivers, it was the Department of Education that made the fitness determination and saw the criminal history. We were not sending it out to every school district and school principal or whatever administration across the state. We had some protections and safeguards about disseminating that very personal information about people. And since this time, I mean, I'm talking about the history a little bit because I do want to give you a background because there are some other bills coming, potentially coming to this committee. You know, it's expanded each session, and we get troubled and concerned as we just continually expand it. As a matter of policy, we will oppose these laws, but today I'm asking in particular to not move these three bills out yet because there's an omnibus bill, House Bill 2157. I want to explain a little bit about that. That was in general government. Chair Berger established a work group. It's probably the biggest work group I've ever been in and designated a number of people.
What was the bill number?
House Bill 2157. After two-plus-hour work group meetings led by Representative Cameron and Representative Galizio, a lot of work was done on the bill. I still have some concerns, but what this bill intends is intended to do, and it was the Oregon State Police that brought it forward, is these laws are all over the place in the books. We need a process and a procedure about which, when prints are obtained and reviewed, and contest the case process. I think DHS can tell you that when they deal with these fingerprints, people have the chance to challenge them. 50% of the time, the information about the criminal history report is not quite accurate, and they are able then to secure the employment. So we need those safeguards in where people can do that. In addition, the law on the House side speaks to both the fingerprints for nationwide, which is the FBI, as well as state background checks. A number of entities have the authority to do statewide, and there's no requirement that the fingerprints be destroyed. So for all those reasons, that bill is now in judiciary on the House side still. It got a referral, and it's still going there. I know they just got it, and it was just reprinted, and I don't have any belief that they're not intending to move forward with it. It's had everyone working very hard in it. All these three entities that are here before you today, they're all in that bill, plus everyone else, and some people who are still trying to join. And I think we urge that that's the best vehicle. If that appears not to be going forward, then it certainly, you know, this committee, you know, wouldn't have a problem bringing these bills back at a later date. And I know we're hopefully getting towards the end of session, but it's got safeguards that these bills don't, because these bills are just specific to these entities, and so you're increasing the problems that we have without some of the solutions that we've all put in this other bill. So I'd ask you not to consider not moving these three forward today, and let's see where 2157 goes in the next few weeks in terms of the process on that. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Ms. Meyer, I'm trying to distill your arguments, but from a practical standpoint, has there been can you name any cases or situations where a board of a health profession has provided fingerprints to a law enforcement agency, which has then been used in investigation or whatever? I'm just sure.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, I know of no particular circumstance, but federal law now, and well, let me just talk about the national security letters, which doesn't even require court oversight, allows the head of the FBI to come in any place and obtain documents from a third party. That third party, be it the Oregon State Bar, be it any of these entities, be it the medical record, it could be anything, it's very broad. They are not allowed to necessarily, there's confusion in the current law whether they can even consult their own attorney about how to handle this national security letter, but they are wholly barred from notifying you that there has been a national security letter order and have obtained your fingerprints. You usually think of the warrant and the checks of the court issuing and notice to the individual whose documents are being obtained. And what I'm saying is that the federal law has moved to such a place that we are exposed to potentially the ability to get those without you even knowing. And the board or whomever disclosing. I mean, for instance, there was some discussion about whether Brandon Mayfield's fingerprints were obtained from the Oregon State Bar. The Oregon State Bar does statewide background check. That means they don't have, under law, the law is silent right now about destroying those fingerprints. And the reason they keep our fingerprints, for those of us who are members of the bar, is simply because the Oregon State Police at the time would put no record stamp on those fingerprints. And so that was what they kept in the file. With the change in 2157, we would establish a new process for the, not only the bar, but for a lot of other agencies. But there was some discussion about whether Mr. Mayfield, who was a member of the bar, his fingerprints were obtained that way. I believe it was from the military involvement. But there's a risk and exposure, and I think this legislature's made a policy statement over the years, and I would hope you all would affirm it again this session, is that we do not collect and maintain, we do not maintain a database of innocent people who have never been convicted of any crime or even arrested or under criminal suspicion of their fingerprints.
And Ms. Meyer, I just want to go back to your nexus argument. And I was here, I think, in the early 90s when we were doing all those fingerprint statutes, but And I would agree with your analysis that at that point in time we were basically doing fingerprinting where the person was going to have contact with vulnerable people, particularly children. I'm thinking child care providers, that situation. I just, from the Board of Medical Examiners' viewpoint, I mean, they have no way of controlling whether a doctor or a physician's assistant or an acupuncturist is going to have access to a child or an elderly person. I mean, it seems to me just sort of a pretty good general protection for them to go forward on. Could you respond to that?
Despite the fact that their doctor might not only be dealing with children or whatever.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, I won't be asking you to do that. I think that is, as much as we don't like it, that's somewhat narrow. Let me give you an example of a situation in the other bill that I don't think is narrow. So I think they've narrowly tailored it so far. It's licensees only. An example, don't mean to pick them out, I just am. Secretary of State's office wanted to be added to this, and I said to them, our concern would be it needs to be narrowly tailored, just not every employee of the Secretary of State's office. They came back in discussions with me and said, okay, we really want to limit to auditor. We have specific criteria of who has contact with fiduciary and money and things. And they were able to articulate a narrow from just all employees. Unfortunately, one of the things that happened in 2157 was some very general language got applied to everyone. And so it meant all employees of the Secretary of State. And then it was going to leave it to those entities and through the rules to do the nexus at that level. And ACLU is not comfortable leaving it to state agencies and various entities within their own rules to narrowly tailor it. We will be asking the legislature to do that on the front end. And then within their own rules, they can make it more tailored in terms of whether all those employees, it's necessary. But we're giving them guidelines. For instance, in that other bill, all employees of the legislative committee, I mean, everyone in this building could be fingerprinted, except for legislators. They omitted them for some reason. But we have some discomfort with the broad language of all contractors, vendors, all employees that is in some of the other agencies and folks, but not present in these three licensing boards bills. They do fit the narrow tailor, so to speak.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Meyer? Sarah Shields.
You were talking about some of the safeguards in the larger bill. If that doesn't move forward, how hard would it be to put those safeguards on these bills?
Chair Brown, Senator Shields, I don't even know how to begin to go there. I'm not even sure. Not easy.
It just seemed to be a logical question
It's a logical question, but the problem is that 2157 was necessitated, and it's a huge, huge bill. It was necessitated because what happens is all these agencies come in each session and add, and their reference might be in a different section of the law, and it ties back to this larger one, and we would have to basically, take the whole thing and stuff it in. I'm not sure it would work.
Is it fair to say House Bill 2157 provides standards for fingerprinting processes? So these bills are not mutually exclusive. For example, we passed 2059, and 2157 could go on in top of that, correct?
Chair Brown, Senator Shields, potentially. I was not privy to some conversations, and others might be better about that, but I first understood that we were going to just use the 2157, which is this bill, as the vehicle. I thought there was some concerns from legislative council about some inconsistencies because we're just adding to the old law on these three. And this larger bill makes some changes to the old law as well as some new things. And so Legislative Council would have to come to terms with the changes. You know, we may be creating a mess that easily can be fixed, but the policy concerns that we have are that you're continuing to expand it without those safeguards. Okay. And they are all in this bill, too.
Safeguards.
Not only the safeguards, but all the chiropractors, the board of medical examiners, and the nurses. They've all been at the table, and they're all in this bill. And I understand what happened was they filed separately. Oregon State Police put this together, has put out notice to folks, and everyone's coming out of the woodwork. And that alarms us to some degree, but we're willing to work with the bill because we think of the safeguards, despite the fact that everyone wants on board this train, and that alarms us. But rather do that than this piecemeal, each session, of this rather messy, messy process that is not got the safeguards. So again, I mean, that's part of the reason I really would like us to wait and move 2157 with some fixes and have those safeguards in there. Because I don't know, Senator Shields, how to even start to get to those in this.
Question?
I guess given what Andrea said, I would feel a lot more comfortable with 2157 than this approach. I'm looking at the practicality of whether that can come forward. I'm looking at Kathleen asking her situation.
Here's my feelings. It's May 24th. We need to start making some decisions. And I'm concerned about waiting on a House bill that isn't out of the committee, with all due respect. So I'll just put that out there. I know you're in no hurry and you love being here, but
hey, I got a vacation in Japan.
Oh, fuck you. Chair Brown?
You had one. I canceled it.
It did come out of one committee, and it just, I mean, I certainly am not opposed. I hope we're out of here soon. I love it. I'm not optimistic. But it did just get, I just talked to Judiciary. I mean, it just got up there Friday. It just got printed. And so, I mean, I'm not intending to try to stop these by, you know, playing games and hope that we get out of the door. But I would like maybe a little leeway, since I know this committee will stay open till the end. It's already gone through the House.
The end is near.
The end is near, one kind or another.
I got a sign.
Okay. All right.
Thank
we'll
you.
Let you go. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for opening up all three bills, by the way.
No problem. Since I see them in the room and I've got the list, let's do, Ms. Bouchand? Joan Bouchand and Ms. Rhodes on 2102. Did I get your last name correctly? Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shields.
I'm being a probably a pain in the neck, but could each of the witnesses, if they know anything about it, comment on the 2157 when they're doing
sure,
this testimony?
Sure.
And I'd like Kathleen to have that opportunity.
We'll let her. We'll bring her up. Hi, welcome.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Thank you. Chair Brown and members of the committee, I'm Joan Bouchard, and I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Nursing. And the Board of Nursing is also coming to seek authority for our fingerprinting authority. We think that the public expects the persons that we license as nurses that they're going to be safe and trustworthy, and so that our licensing process has to be conducted with a high degree of confidence that the people that we license are safe. Currently, we rely on self-reporting of criminal history, and we also perform the LEDs, the Oregon Law Enforcement Data System checks. And this information, however, as you know, is only limited to criminal activities in Oregon, and nurses are a very mobile population. And so we are feeling that because so many nurses come to us from out of state that we would like to do the fingerprinting to make sure that they are safe. We certify over 60,000 nurses and nursing assistants, and in any one biennium, we approve about 15,000 initial applicants. And 36% of these applicants are from out of state. Approximately 30% of the other boards of nursing have fingerprint authority, and it is recommended that all boards of nursing pursue this authority. We did a tour of the state last summer, and we asked nurses, what do you think of this? Because we knew that we were going to propose this as a legislative concept. And 83%, we went to 29 cities across Oregon, and 83% of the nurses who attended these outreach programs said that they supported fingerprinting authority for the nurses.
Senator Shields.
Maybe I'm the only person left in the whole cotton-picking building. It hasn't been fingerprinted, but I don't like the idea of, you know, what did I do to deserve to be fingerprinted? Don't you get some of that feeling from people?
We did. 9% of the nurses that we talked to were not in favor of it. And the others...
You're proven innocent anymore.
Well, right? Chair Brown, Senator Shields, I think that the nurses felt that they were in a profession where they realized that the nurses take care of very vulnerable people. And they have worked alongside some nurses who they found later did have a criminal record. So I think that those stories have gotten out in the nursing profession is willing to regulate its own on this issue.
Thanks. Thanks, Ms. Bouchard. I see Ms. Robinson. Are you here just for a change of pace?
No, I'm here for the
counter bill.
Just not this one.
Okay. All right. Okay. I just didn't want to waste your valuable time. Ms. Rhodes, go.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, Lauren Rhodes with the Oregon Healthcare Association, and we are here today supporting -2 amendments that are achieving a verbal agreement between the Oregon State Board of Nursing and the Department of Human Services. Earlier in the session, we had conversations to achieve efficiency and avoid duplicate checks on people so as to reduce the number of people who are actually fingerprint checked. Basically, what we do is we are required to check all employees in long-term care facilities pursuant to the Department of Human Services criminal records check process. And what we would like to see in conjunction with the Board of Nursing is to allow the sharing of the results of the fingerprint checks. If a person was checked within the past 6 months by either agency, then the agencies could share the results of the checks with each other.
So this is agency streamlining.
Yes, that is it. I submitted a letter from Representative Berger explaining that this amendment would have gone forth in the House, but it wasn't prepared in time. And a similar amendment is in House Bill 2157, achieving the same result. I'm happy to take any questions.
All right. Questions for this esteemed panel? And then, Ms. Meyer, we have your remarks. Okay. Thank you very much. Ms. Haley, do you want to come up and tell us a little bit about 2157? You don't have to.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, my name is Kathleen Haley, and I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Medical Examiners. One of our staff did participate in the work group on House Bill 2157. I don't feel conversant in it, but I did ask Bill Buckley of the State Police about how that bill compares to ours, and ours is actually, that is 2059A engrossed, is more restrictive than 2157 because we've already provided that these fingerprint cards will either be returned or destroyed, and that was the concern that the ACLU had voiced at the during the House hearings on this bill.
Okay.
So we feel like we've already addressed that, and our bill does not allow us to do fingerprint checks on our employees, which House Bill 2157 does. We have no intention of doing that. We want to do it for applicants for licensure. The courts have been very clear that the board would not restrict somebody's ability to practice medicine unless there was that nexus between the practice and the criminal activity.
When,
Senator Shields,
when do you return or destroy? What triggers that? You say yours is better because you do return or destroy.
The Section 9 of the bill says that each applicant and licensee will furnish the full set, and the board will submit those to the Department of State Police. Then if you look under 9B, it says the FBI shall return or destroy the fingerprint cards after the check. So, thank you.
I just wanted to clarify.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have another question, Senator Atkinson.
Yeah.
Boy, you're wide awake today.
Yeah. So your board handles physicians, podiatrists, acupuncture, and who else?
Physician assistants.
PAs. Okay. So just get to me this fundamental question. How many bad physicians, podiatrists, acupuncture, and PAs have been caught by doing a national scan?
Chair Brown, Senator Atkinson, in the states that have been doing it around us, it's 5%. In Florida, which has been doing it for a while, it's higher than that. It's, I think, around 10-12%.
Florida's a bad people magnet.
Yeah, but they have more people. We have 3 million people here.
But it's percentages.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very
much. All right,
thank you. Do you have a question, too?
Only a statement, Madam Chairman. The
The protocol for destroying the fingerprints may be on the books, but you'll never verify that, and you'll never get them destroyed.
Okay.
And I know that from the other venues where fingerprint information is archived in a national
Senator
database.
Senator Farioli, have you ever been fingerprinted?
About 15 times in the past 10 years.
Okay, you guys. When the black helicopters come, let's make sure they land on the Capitol grounds.
They come in many colors. Should we cut their funding?
Huh? Yeah, we cut their funding.
All right, I'm going to close the public hearing on 2059, 2061, 2102. We will not move those today, but Ms. Meyer, you don't have a lot of time. I said I'm not going to move those bills today, but you don't have a lot of time. Okay?
Hurry judiciary, in other words.
Yeah. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2266. And Ms. Robinson, I'm sorry I didn't see you earlier. I would have... I know, you probably needed the change of scenery or something.
I didn't see her back. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Holly Robinson from Legislative Council. 2266 was introduced at the request of our office or the Legislative Council Committee. There are some changes that during the editing process our office discovers that we consider to be too substantial for the revisers bill, which is already long enough. And in this particular case, we identified a problem where when the Department of Human Services was reorganized in 2001, we missed some of the references to some of the functions and duties of underlying agencies. In this particular statute, which applies to investigations of abuse complaints at nursing homes, there was a reference made, or currently in the statute, of investigating divisions. If one were to read that, one wouldn't know what it referred to, and it is more accurate to say that the Department of Human Services or the Area Agency on Aging is the one who's taking the photographs. We strive for perfection, but at the least we like to be accurate in our statutes. And so that's why we submitted this.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Robinson? Great. I think you're off the hook. Thank you very much. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2266. Open a public hearing on 2207. Ms. Harris, what do we have?
Thanks, Madam Chair. House Bill 2207 provides that an administrative rule is not valid unless it's adopted in substantial compliance with the notice and comment and other procedural requirements that are in effect on the date that the notice of intent to adopt a rule is delivered to the Secretary of State for publication.
Mr. Schradl, I have you signed up. Is there anybody else wishing to testify on House Bill 2207? Come on up.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, Philip Schradl, special counsel to the Attorney General. This is one of the Department of Justice's bills. We did this in conjunction with the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. And the goal of this bill is just to ensure that the administrative rulemaking process doesn't have kind of a pitfall in it. During the last legislative session, there were some minor changes made to rulemaking requirements, and there were between a half dozen and a dozen rulemakings that were in process at the time. Those had to be halted and restarted all over again at time and expense, and in fact I think some confusion was probably engendered by the fact that more than multiple notices of rulemaking went out on the same rules. This change is a very minor one. It's on page 4 of the bill, printed bill, and it simply changes the date so that rules that are in progress, if they complied with the rulemaking requirements that were in place at the time that the notice of the intended adoption of those rules was filed with the Secretary of State, that then suffices. And rather than the current law would call for it, in effect, on the date the rule is adopted. And the problem with that is that there can be a long period of time between the notice of intent to adopt a rule and the date that the rule is finally adopted. And consequently, this would save time, would save expense. That's the goal. Passed unanimously on the House side.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Schradl? All right. I think you're off the hook. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2207. All right.
As we're passing, let's stand at ease for a couple of minutes. Do we have any... close the public hearing on House Bill 227. Open a work session on House Bills 2207, House Bills 2266, and House Bills 3464. The chair would move House Bill 2207 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing seeing none, so ordered. I'll be happy to carry that bill. Very interesting.
Exciting.
Yes. Chair opens a work session on 2266, moves House Bill 2266 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing, seeing none? So ordered. Senator Shields, I'll let you carry that one since it's up your alley. House Bill.
He's aging faster than I am.
I meant in terms of your work interests. Open a work session on House Bill 3464. The chair would move House Bill 3464 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none. So ordered. Who would like to carry 3464?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson. We are so appreciative of your work efforts. Seeing as there are no bills to introduce or get drafted.
Why is it that the guy showed up last didn't have to carry any bills?
I don't know.
He's glad to give him my bill.
That's fine. You guys can argue about it and just decide before we get to Senate floor. Any other pertinent or important business to become before the committee?
Pertinent?
Pertinent.
Pertinent?
Pertinent.
She defined that for
it. Pertinent.
It's a lot like...
Yeah. We're being impertinent.
That were adjourned. Oh, my gosh.